Yeah, you know what time it is when you hear that voice. You know what time it is when you hear that voice. I am John Browner. I am here with Jason Lawhead. This is Browner and Lawhead. As always, you're listening on the Mightier 1090, and you can find the show on any social platform. You can find the show on YouTube by simply going to Kaplan and Crew. We are the show with the date in front. Jason, it was a crazy football weekend. Woo. What's up, bro?
Man, I have never, you know what? Since doing this show with you, Browner, dude, I swear to God, I have never looked forward to Mondays before in my life. This is it. Dude, this is like the fourth, what is it now? I don't know how many, three, four, five. This is the fifth, and they only get better. The Mondays only get better around here. Man, what a
you find
day.
Yourself, when something happens with sports, you find yourself going, oh, I can't wait to get to that on Monday.
All day. From the start of the game, I had a weird Sunday. I'll just jump in real quick because we were back in your neighborhood over the weekend. Unfortunately, I mentioned earlier in the show that my wife's father suddenly passed a few weeks ago at a young age. He was a Southside Chicago guy. We were back Saturday in Chicago with the family for the memorial, and you know, so many emotions going on there. And then Sunday we had an early flight back to San Diego, and early enough where on Southwest I was able to watch, you know, the free TV. I was able to watch we were early, so I got in by the time we were on board. It was first quarter of the Falcons game in London, and then quite so long that I was able to watch the whole Bengals Packers game on CBS. We landed just as that thing was unfolding into overtime, and I was home in my living room for the Browns Chargers game. So yeah, I mean, a wild weekend. I was able to kind of digest it and ingest it all, even with everything going on, and then led into the Sunday night game, which, I mean, was a big statement. So lots to talk about. Just crazy excited about this Monday.
First of all, we do winners and losers on this show. Who's the biggest winner of the weekend? Who's the biggest loser of the weekend? I'm pretty sure everyone knows who the biggest loser is, so we'll save that for the second half of the show. Jason, break down this winner for me.
Well, I think the winners are here's my winner for the weekend is any guy looking to get a kicking job. Kaplan might have a shot to get back in the league after this. Maybe he can get out there and get a few tryouts. My winner is every guy shopping for a job, kicking a football in the NFL. There's always a handful or a dozen out there that are working with somebody and waiting for that phone call. So what a weird, wild day of just not just missed field goals that we saw in the one game where there was five missed in a 6-minute span of the Packers, but extra points. Chip shot field goals, absolutely yanked. I mean, hitting them like I hit golf shots sometimes from 75 yards out, just pull jobs. And so my winners are short and sweet. It's all those guys out there waiting for a phone call. I think you might see at least some roster moves to bring people in just to see if they can possibly be a fix. I don't think that the Packers will bail on Mason Crosby just yet with his, but you never know if that leg starts, poking left or right as the season goes on. They're going to have to make a decision there.
I thought one of the things when they moved the extra point back, I thought it wouldn't really make that big of a difference. Obviously, I've never kicked a football in my life in any competition level for fun ever. So when they moved it back, I was like, that's still not that hard. It can't be. It's like 35 yards. Like, that's like a gimme for a professional NFL kicker, even if it's 35, I think it's 25 yards, actually.
I think it's the hash plus, it's like 33 or 30.
Yeah, it's something
uneven
in that range.
Number because of where the hash is, but
right.
But they can put it anywhere they want. They can put it on, they get to select,
either
like, I like it from this side, I want it straight on. It's a chip shot. It is an NFL chip shot.
And yet we have NFL guys who do nothing for a living but kick that ball. Missing after miss after miss after miss. And so I agree with you. This is a winner because you know who wins when kicks get missed? The fans win. The fans win because it makes the kicker seem just like a dude, man. It makes the kicker seem like a guy, some guy sitting on a bar stool somewhere can walk out there and kick a 35 yard like it's nothing because this bum who doesn't do anything else but kick can't do it. Like it is one of the most unsuspecting things that happen, unless it's like the last kick of the game. When a guy misses an extra kick, you go, huh, didn't see that coming. You always expect for them to make it. I never look at a guy and go, oh, well, that's not going to go in. That's an extra point. But it's happening all the time, and I absolutely
all the time, and in good conditions. It's not like, I mean, these are early season, sometime dome.
It's not December around the league.
It's not, this isn't week 15, 14, 15, 16, where there's just a collection of some missed kicks because, hey, there's wind, there's cold, there's rain, there's snow. I mean, these are the best, these are the conditions these guys practice in ideally every day. And it is wild that when they did move that back, how much that's changed the game and how much that's made some coaches just start really going for two in more situations, because even if their kicker didn't miss the last one, he might have remembered the one he missed the game before, and they say, hey, we're going for two here.
Or you know what has changed? It's changed the fact that people go for it on fourth down as well.
Yes.
Anyone on the opposite side of the 40, on the opponent's 40, they stop punting from there. They don't try to do field position. They go for it. The Chargers went for it on 4th-and-7 yesterday after a penalty on 4th-and-2.
Yeah, and you know what? It's with the way the game spread out, why wouldn't you, right? You're on the other side of the 50. You're invading. Hey, and the nice thing is now they're preparing teams for this. They're preparing the drives to say, guys, when we cross midfield, don't think third down's the last play.
Right.
We're playing 4th down. So now we have a playbook. Now they're drawing playbooks for 4th down territory. So these guys are maybe on, you know, 2nd and 10 goes to 3rd and 6, and then incomplete goes to 4th and 6. They're already huddling up knowing that on 2nd and 10, if we get to 4th and change, as long as we're not going backwards, we're going to go for it. So it makes the game way more exciting because, like, that mentality, I think we talked about it last week a little bit, where that mentality of defense is thinking they've conquered. It's 3rd and long. We shut them down. 3rd and 10. We're coming off the field. You're not coming off the field.
Right.
So it's changing the mentality of the defense of having to mentally stay, prepared for that 4th down play and pulling them offside. So, yeah, and then the missed extra points just changes strategies throughout the game. It makes the coach have to go for two if he didn't want to the next time. And it's spurring the opponent to maybe have a lead to make it a 3-possession lead with that extra two instead of keeping it a 2. So many intangibles, so much fun. It's creating so much drama. And, wild, wild way to just get the money. When kicking used to just be like, oh, they're bringing the kicker out. This thing's good. Wah, it ain't like that anymore.
Speaking of wild game to the end, your Browns, man, your Browns. So for people who are still hating, not watching or hate watching the Chargers or whatever the case may be, Justin Herbert and Austin Eckler led the Los Angeles Chargers to a 47-42 win over the Browns. If you've been watching this show, I have been telling you how good Justin Herbert is. If you've been watching this show, you know how good the Cleveland Browns defense is, because Jason will tell you, and I will complain, that they sacked Justin Fields like 50 times. So it's well known that you're playing a real team. That was a game, Jason. That was a game.
That was as perfect of a game from two opponents, right? I mean, we saw an NFL record of most combined total yards well into four digits. I mean, they surpassed 1,000, I think, together with a lot of time on the clock.
Yes.
You're looking at two quarterbacks that, I mean, Baker Mayfield plays a game that you don't lose in the NFL, right? Like the statistics.
Stat line.
He stays away from the sack. One early one stays away from the rest of the game. He had been sacked going into that second quarter. That was when he got sacked in the first quarter to slow down one of the early drives. That was 9 sacks in 9 quarters. Then he went 3 quarters without a sack. He started, you know, really getting rid of the ball, making quick decisions. A great little Mahomes-like move on that 2-point conversion, the underhand spin pass. He was finding receivers quickly to keep Bosa off of his back. Offensive line did a really good job being able to create the run game. They ran, I mean, statistically, when you look at the run game, the pass game, they didn't turn the ball over. They had 13 more minutes of time of possession for over 500 yards of total offense, and they lose a football game. Questionable calls on a few things, sure, but the Browns – but you know what? Look, it would anger me more as a Browns fan if the NFL had this reputation of really good officiating or almost impeccable officiating. And then you could look right back and go, come on, man, we got robbed.
It was bad all day. It was bad
all day, every week in every stadium in the NFL for years and years and years. And we know that. And they still had a chance to win the game after the missed PAT. 42-41. They had chances.
I'm not going to sit here and butcher the refs. But at some point, probably after this, I'll get to my piece about the refs. I have to ask you a question. I pose this question to the Kaplan and Crew cast as well. I'm going to pose the same question to you. Does Kevin Stefanski not trust Baker Mayfield? Because if it's a 3rd and 10 and you trust your guy, like Staley trusts his guy and Justin Herbert, why on 3rd and 10 are you running what the equivalent of a draw play that into the line when they ran the ball well, so I get that. But you're not tricking anybody at that point in the game. What's with the 3rd and 10? You put the ball in Baker Mayfield's hands on 2nd down. Why not run another play with the ball in his hands on 3rd down? Are we reaching a crossroads with Stefanski and Baker Mayfield where they're just going to punt it and try to let the defense hold?
Well, I couldn't believe that second to last series, not the last series. I mean, some of those play calls, even with 1:30 left, getting short yardage on
made no sense
stuff with no timeouts was, you know, at that point they had put themselves in a predicament though, that right, they didn't have to be in up 42-41. And right there, you know, Chubb didn't touch the ball at 42-41 inside. So I'm more concerned how they got to 3rd and 10 than what they did on 3rd and 10, because I think Chubb should have got it over the left side on 1st down. It went to Hunt for a yard instead of going to Hunt Chubb for maybe 5 or 6, because it seems like that's the worst he gets most of the time on a run. So I thought with the way Chubb had kind of just dictated that running game, opened it up for Hunt to be a guy that could kind of feast off of it all day long with pitch outs and screens to him, knowing that I was more disappointed that on 1st down, we didn't go to Chubb to try to force that first timeout, right? Inside of 3 minutes,
right?
1 minute warning. And then at 3rd down, possibly have a better opportunity to keep the ball in a situation where the clock runs to force them into another timeout. Instead, we throw incomplete passes. I know where you're going. We throw incomplete passes. Don't soak those timeouts. They've got the ball with 2 and the 2 minute warning before going the other way. And with a guy like Herbert, look, Herbert's proven. He's almost getting to that Mahomes point of don't get this guy the ball back. And if you give him the ball back, don't give him it with any timeouts left.
Right.
At least. So I thought that I was more concerned what we didn't do on 1st down than what we did on 3rd down.
Okay.
And, you know, there's a lot of what play do you run? Do you know if an incomplete pass is going to stop the clock? An interception at that point is going to really jar you. And
See, this is why I disagree. And I think this is where we're going to separate. Because I agreed with you up until that point about the interception. If you give Justin Herbert the ball back, what have you seen all day? Specifically, what have you seen in the 4th quarter that would suggest that you're going to stop this person? And I mean, I'm talking about with how much time they had on the clock, with the timeouts. If you kick the punt out of the end zone, mm-hmm, and they came to the 25, they're still going to score. So it was lost on me that Baker Mayfield, at this point in his career, over 50 games started at quarterback, that Kevin Stefanski can't say, go win us this game. You're my franchise quarterback. You're my guy. Is Aaron Rodgers going to hand that ball off on 3rd and 10? Is Tom Brady going to hand that ball off on 3rd and 10? No, he's not as good as them. Is Dak Prescott going to hand that ball off on 3rd and 10? Is Kirk Cousins going to hand that ball off on 3rd and 10? No. Absolutely not. So why in the hell is Baker Mayfield handing that ball off on 3rd and 10 with Justin Herbert blazing at that point in the game?
Yeah.
It makes no sense.
Yeah, I know. I mean, all three plays in that series, that 3 and out, I mean, one first down gets San Diego to have to soak those timeouts.
Yes.
And it gets you past the 2 minute warning, and it gets you to have San Diego have to soak those timeouts, which I think gives your defense at least something to kind of suck some air and go, let's go pin our ears back and let's get a stop here. He's got right. no timeouts. Yes, he's great. He's had our secondary's number all day long, especially in the long ball game. And, you know, not having Clowney out there, I thought, you know, was obviously with the way our pass rush has been.
It was visible.
It was deficient. Garrett played a great game. There's no doubt.
Yes.
But Clowney really has helped Garrett in those situational double teams in certain situations.
He's taken full advantage of it.
Right. And he's increased he made the secondary better, right? When those two guys are on the end coming, it creates a better secondary and creates quicker, less time. I mean, a quarterback's got to get it out quicker. So it gives your secondary a lot more time to stay stride for stride when that pressure is coming and the pocket's collapsing. Herbert's a special quarterback. I have nothing bad to say about the way Baker Mayfield played. I'm glad we started getting the ball in the end zone. I think last week when we previewed the show, I said we can't settle for field goals. We got to get the ball in the end zone.
And you did.
Concern with this whole offense right now, Higgins, that catch to Higgins, that's the only wide receiver touchdown this year.
No, and also here at this point, I will give the Chargers coaching staff credit. I'll give Staley a lot of credit. They did not give up big plays because they designed that defense against that offense to not give up big plays. We're not going to let Odell Beckham beat us. I think Njoku had one long touchdown run, if I'm not mistaken. And outside of that, if that's all you give up and you gave up 42 points and you made them work to get down in the field, I'm okay with that. And I think they were okay with that too. I don't think the Chargers defense had a problem with the score. I think the Chargers had more of an issue with getting stops because they couldn't get stops either. And so coming up big, or correction, the Browns helping them at the end of the game by running it on 3rd and 10, that's why it made no sense. Because as hot as Justin Herbert was, Baker Mayfield was good in that game as well. So it made no sense to me that you throw it on second down, but then on third down, you literally don't do anything. You don't put an emphasis on the referees who've been terrible. Why? Yeah. You know what? Let me get to that while I'm here. The NFL needs to simplify the rules. The rules are too complicated. And because of that, the referees are making a lot of mistakes because they're seeing things and they're just throwing flags and then trying to correct the flag after they've thrown it. Because I saw a lot of flags get picked up. Oh, no penalty, because these guys are throwing flags if they think they see something, because there's too many rules now. We've made the catch this weird thing. You can't touch the quarterback at all at any point in time during an actual sack, or that's a flag. Pass interference almost never gets called when it's supposed to. Like, everything is, there are too many rules. These referees are looking for too many things, and they're just throwing flags, and then you got to justify this flag that you threw it and upheld it. I've watched probably, there's been 5 weeks, I've probably watched maybe 12 games. I've never in my life heard the announcers say, that's a bad call, more than I have 5 weeks through this season.
I mean, Al Michaels, I don't know how many times last night he just said, well, there's a shock, another flag. Well, that's a surprise, a flag on the play. Like, right? And yeah, they picked even a couple up last night where they were going, well, I don't know what about that.
Whoops.
And what's crazy is the NFL is who brought replay to the forefront, right? They kind of invented replay for modern sports. Everybody that's using replay now, whether it's the NBA at the table, college football, college basketball, baseball, I mean, even baseball went to replay, are using it way more effectively than the sport that introduced it and put it on the table years and years ago to say, hey, we're going to start trying to get it right. Then get it right. Put a sky judge up there or put somebody that is over the center camera that slides on that line and has an earpiece to the referee or the crew chief, the umpire, the referee. I think it's the referee is the crew chief that says, hey, look, man, we just throw a flag, right? Like, you can just be in the play and just have a sky judge go and throw a flag. In live action, throw a flag. It's going to be, you know, a defensive holding on that right in that right edge. We're watching it from the sky, right? From the NFL, so
the NFL is so cheap. Pay one extra referee to be the replay referee. He is not on the field. He is in the booth. So the pressure of the pressure of the fans screaming, the pressure of the game, the players, the movement does not impact this person. All they're doing is looking at the replay when it comes to them. That's it. That's all. Like, I don't understand this idea that the NFL has all this money but has part-time officials. It makes no sense. Right. It's a $1 billion industry. Pay your referees full time, dude. This is embarrassing. And because there's so many rules now, this is a year-round issue where once the season's over, ref school. You have to, because these guys are they're missing simple calls. They're old. Some of them are in great shape, and then some of them ain't in any in a shape. So something has to be figured out. We've got to get to the bottom of this. This has to be fixed because it is ruining really good games. That call seriously impacted the winner and the loser of that game. Baker said it didn't come down to that, but I disagree because I think it did. Because if that call gets made, they keep the ball, and I think they score again, and they basically put the game out of reach. But we've got so much more. We've got so much more on this show. It was a crazy weekend in sports. We won't even talk about Alabama being the number one team and being out of number one. I forgot what I was going to say. Browner, Lawhead, we'll be back. Second half of the show, Mightier 1090. Browner, Lawhead, John Browner, Jason Lawhead. All the shows that you missed, this show, the last show, last week's shows, we are here Monday through Wednesday from 6 to 7 p.m., giving you the oddest takes and things that have happened in sports. Jason, we had a crazy fast first half of this pod. We're going to have a probably even faster second half of this pod, because what's up first on this? Have you had a chance to see what was going on with Damaris Smith and John Gruden?
You know, I've kind of only really paid attention to the whatever media spins have kind of been out there. Yes, I've seen the headlines. I haven't dove too deep into the story. I obviously in the pregame yesterday, Tirico and Dungy defended him. Tim Brown defended him.
Randy Moss cried.
I've kind of just looked at this one on the surface a little bit. But I'd love to hear your take.
Okay, so let me explain the story, and then, because I think I couldn't have had a perfect person on the show to have this conversation with, and I'll explain why after I explain the details. So in 2011, mind you, in 2011, John Gruden, not working for an organization for professional football, working for ESPN, sent an email to his brother about his dislike for Damaris Smith. By the way, a lot of people don't like Damaris Smith, including some of the players. Damaris Smith he's in charge of the Players Association. He's the executive director. And at the time, there was a lockout going on back and forth, and guys were yelling at each other. And in this email, John Gruden said, in shorthand, that Damaris Smith has Michelin lips. Okay? Now, that could be interpreted as many things. It was interpreted as a racist trope, okay? This is me. This is my opinion on this particular person, on this particular topic. I don't care. I don't care what John Gruden put in an email in 2011 unless it was illegal or so overtly racist that he should be fired as the head coach of the Las Vegas Raiders. And it was neither of those two things. If we are going to start reading people's emails from a decade ago, a lot of people are fired. Okay? In your private life, emailing your friends, no one is clean. Right. No one is clean. Sometimes jokes don't land. And depending on the person receiving the joke, it's not funny and it's hurtful. But if out of 100 people, 98 of them laugh, and the two people are upset, ignore the two people. Find two more people to hear jokes. This idea that he's supposed to be fired, the players are supposed to be mad at him about a joke he made that either wasn't funny or it was just something mean said. And the second thing, I'll get to this, and this is why Jason is the perfect person to have this conversation, because he's a professional at this. White guys can tell jokes about black people. It's okay. Like, it's not racist if you're a white person tells a joke about a black person. And I say Jason is the perfect person to have this conversation, not because of that, but because of people not understanding the nature of comedy. And if something doesn't land, it doesn't make it racist.
Yeah, you know,
First off, I've never even heard the term Michelin lips. I don't even know what the context or the core of that criticism is.
Because Michelin tires are huge, and okay. He's got big black lips and look like okay. Michelin tires.
Yeah. Okay. Well,
I thought it was funny. I laughed. Listen, I'm a degenerate. I thought right. It was funny. I laughed.
Yeah, I'm just even surprised Gruden has that even attempt at comedy in him. I think that's the biggest story, is that Gruden, if he was attempting comedy, then that's pretty big. You know, pretty much what you said is head on at the end of the day. 10 years ago, part of Monday Night Football, an email to his brother about a guy that is widely unliked. You're right. I think if a lot of basically whether it's a head coach or Dave Chappelle special or anybody doing anything. And if I sent you an email or you sent me an email and we had some, you know, we might think, and 98% of our listeners might think it's funny or it's in jest or it isn't harmful. And if the two people that are triggered by it are triggered by it, and you know, cancel culture wants results, right? Immediate. They want heads. I mean, right. It is this, like, don't even ask the guy. Don't even let him speak. The email speaks for itself. Off with his head. You know, and I raised my hand funnily, but like, yes, like, no, I'm sure there's some things, you know, I went on a text message rant years ago with a comic over a agent. You know, said some things about me after I confronted them about something, and you know, whatever, it could be misconstrued, right? Like if you looked back and you weren't any of us and me and him, or you didn't know exactly the situation, you might be like, oh my God, this guy can be canceled for that. Like, and it was a joke about something about that person. And, that was not like, I don't buy into this whole cancel culture stuff. I mean, hate is hate. That's easy to see, right? Hate is easy to see. You know, vitriol and hate is easy to see. Jokes not landing, I think, are easier to see. And but some people just don't want to. They just want to pick out a word or two words in a paragraph, or you know, how two words sound together in a whole email.
Right.
And they want results. And that's what cancel culture wants. It wants off with the heads and look, I got look what I was able to accomplish by really not knowing the entirety of the story, but just cherry picking a part of it. So, you know, who does he need to apologize to? Maybe Morris, if he feels compelled to say, hey, look, man, I was just trading an email with my brother.
He doesn't have to apologize to anyone, because I guarantee you, if you go through DeMora Smith's emails, he's fired too.
Yeah.
Like, stop going through people's emails, man. Cut it out. Stop it. Those are personal conversations had between people. If this person doesn't display these things publicly, then it's not my business. Like, I am very exhausted by the idea that we get to go through these people's lives in such a detailed extent that they can't have a life. Like, I don't care what John Gruden's not a pastor. He's not the Pope. He's not running for president. He's a damn football coach, man. He's a damn football coach.
Of the Raiders.
Right. And the people who don't like this don't operate within the football culture. So they take quote unquote football talk into the real world, and into the real world, that talk sounds disgusting. Like, if you ever played a sport at any level, dudes talking in a locker room is wild crazy. And none of them will say it outside of that locker room. Now I don't do grabbing by the peat level locker room talk. Cause again, that's egregious and offensive, and that hurts people. But this idea that calling somebody big lips basically can get you canceled, and I'm in a lot of trouble. Don't ever go through my emails.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I'm saying. He doesn't owe the public or football or a press conference an apology. That was my point. I felt, I said, yeah. Yeah, if he feels compelled to pick up the phone to Morris, then whatever. Then that's just John Gruden being John Gruden and thinking he's doing the right thing if he feels compelled to do it. But there's no apology. There is a 10-year-old email with something said to his brother about a player. And if you think that that's the only thing that's been going, what do you think's worse, huh? You think it's worse than Sean Payton's coaching staff saying, hey, there's a pool of money to take off this guy's head? You know, I mean, really, at the end of the day, so, right. You know what I mean? Like, hey, you know, hey, and then Payton just gets a year off to coach. Not that I think that he should have been banned from football or anything. I'm just saying, what's really worse? Like you said, this guy wasn't even coaching in the league. He was sending an email as a broadcaster outside of the league saying, this is what I know. And, you know, buy at your own risk or whatever it is. And, you know, it's the loser is to me is the ongoing cancel culture to me in this whole thing.
We want to talk about two things because we want to try to get these two things in because what happened yesterday on Sunday, two major things happened. We always like to talk interdivision, so we want to go over what happened with what's happening with the Chiefs, and we want to talk about what's happening with the Raiders because it's important to the football that we cover. So we're gonna start here. The Bears beat the Raiders 20-9 on Sunday. But it wasn't that they beat them, it's the way that they beat them. The Raiders have a real run defense problem. The Bears don't really have an identity probably until this week because they absolutely mauled the Raiders. I'm talking about absolutely mauled them. And so the Chargers gave the game plan of how to get to David Carr or Derek Carr, whichever one he is. Just rush him. Rush him, rush him, rush him. He'll panic. And then if they can't stop the run, there's your key to beat them. Did you get a chance to see any of this?
Just some clips, but, you know, you're right. Once you take play action out of anything Carr can do, when that option is just gone, yes. And then if there's penetration, the Raiders are in trouble. And just based off of a lot of the highlights and some of the stuff I read about the game, you know, and harking back to that Charger game as well, which is why I never even came close to putting them in my top five when we were ranking them, even at 3-0. I just kind of felt like, you know, even they got three good games out of the block, Steelers struggling, whatever, some other teams, mm-hmm. Ravens, they caught them off guard early with making adjustments to their roster. I had to see more. They're kind of like the Cowboys to me. I still got to see a little bit more than some kind of opponents before I start gracing them with anything. And I think this game was a big, you know, light on the deficiencies the Raiders still have going forward. And, you know, look, the Bears, you say they don't really, here's the identity. The Bears, I think you're right. That they caught on to this is that we got to, if we just do this, protect a rookie quarterback and stop the run. We're going to be in a lot of these games.
Yes. Because you might not win them,
but we're going to be in a lot of them. And anytime you're in a lot of football games in the NFL, you have a chance to win them. And if you can stop the run consistently over four quarters and get to a quarterback, then you got some real, you know, your defense can make big plays and give your offense gifts, you know, hand Justin field position. And that's their identity. Their identity is going to be get us in the best field position for Justin Fields to have a chance to win these football games. And, you know, that is the blueprint for them. This Raider game is the blueprint for them to consistently be in football games the rest of the way. And they're 3-2. I mean, the Bears, you know, the Bears somehow are 3-2.
They are top 10 in run defense, more at the end of 10 than the beginning of 10, but they lead the league in sacks. Okay, they lead the league in sacks. That is a huge stat because sacks usually happen on second and third down.
Yes.
So I think that was a huge key to beating the Raiders on Sunday. And I got to admit, the Chargers gave that blueprint on national television on how to beat them when the Raiders were undefeated. And the Bears basically followed that up and did the exact same thing. We're able to run the ball, similar to what the Chargers did, and we're able to make key plays when the game got close, which is what Justin Fields did. But what we are seeing in this division as well is, I've been the person saying, yes, the Chiefs lost this game. Yes, the Chiefs lost this game. And I've watched these games, so it's not like I'm not watching them. I'm box score watching. I've been watching these games because I'm a huge Patrick Mahomes fan. Something's wrong.
Yeah.
Something is wrong with this team. The referees were atrocious in the Buffalo Chiefs game. If you thought they were bad in the Chargers-Browns game, the night crew took the cake, okay?
But they're bad on both ends of the ball, though.
Yeah, yes. I'm not saying one in one direction. But the Chiefs' defense was far worse than any refereeing that was on that field.
Yeah.
I mean, they are absolutely pathetic. Now, I get it. When you give your quarterback $500 million, this is what your defense is probably going to look like. You got to start drafting.
You got a white, strong safety. It's 2021, and you got a white guy playing safety. Now, you can have a mixed-race quarterback in the NFL, but you can't have a white guy playing safety.
You can't have no white safeties, no white corners, none of that. You cooked. You are cooked. And that appears to be their issue. They have no defense, and as great as Patrick Mahomes is, no one can fire on all cylinders at all times on Sundays, man. It was pouring rain. Tariq Hill all of a sudden can't catch short passes. And now that he looks amazing still, the rest of them just look average.
Yeah, you could hear Chief fans on the way out of the stadium chanting, yeah, there's a big uh-oh there, which is, you know, I didn't really think there was much to panic about, but, you know, early on, I didn't have him in my Power 5 rankings because I knew that they weren't where they wanted to be, but last night really showed that they are not anywhere near where they want to be. And, you know, they don't really run the ball that well either. I mean, if they're throwing it all over you, they can sneak Tyreek Hill out of the backfield and get creative with plays.
Right.
Sure. And Mahomes has the legs. That's really the gist of their running game right there, is having you on having your defense on their heels. That's how their running game is successful. And they haven't really been able, even though they've scored some points, yes, this season, they really haven't been able to keep defenses from being way back on their heels against
they
typically do, right?
They so their defense is bad. Yesterday.
Their defense is bad, but their running game isn't establishing this, let's just go throw it all over the lot and run these formations and get in these crazy sets and let's just have fun and put up video game numbers like we always do. And so, and then, you know, if your defense is sitting there and getting chewed up on the other side, you're always, you know, this isn't a team used to playing catch up football. You know, points down, 10 points down might be their big deficit in the past couple years to have to come back on. And then they can just go put 21 on the board in a row. But now they're looking uphill at some teams. And, you know, last couple weeks, I bought into Buffalo, you know, high in my power rankings, and for a lot of reasons. You know, they just don't give up touchdowns. That Buffalo Bill defense has only given up 6 touchdowns in 5 games, and one of those touchdowns was with a 43-13 lead with the Redskins in the closing minutes. Washington in the closing minutes. You know, just kind of not, you know, who cares? It was a 3-minute
touchdown
with a 30-point lead. So.
And they've also got 2 shutouts, and that rarely happens in the NFL. And they've got 2 of them.
Yeah, and that's what I've harked on is you know, I don't care who their opponents were in those 2 games. They shut them down to not even a field goal. So the Bills are for real. The Chiefs are for really in trouble, I think, right now, because not only are they they're 2 full games back of the Chargers in the division. Chargers only early tiebreaker. They're 2 full games back of the Bills for home field. So those are 3 game leads that the Chargers and the Bills are up 3 games on the Chiefs right now. There's a lot of football to play, sure. But boy, the Bills, after next week, they go to Tennessee, they win that game. They've got the favorable schedule going all the way almost into Christmas. And these Bills teams look like they could go 16-1 with this schedule.
The Bills have the luxury that the Patriots have had for 20 years.
Yes.
You're in the AFC East. It's terrible.
Yep.
Miami looked like they were going to come on for a second. I don't know if it is Tua or if it is the quarterback situation, but God, they look terrible.
Terrible.
One, Two, the Jets will always be bad. Yes, they played better in London. They still lost to the Falcons.
Yeah.
That and the Patriots, regardless of what you think of Mac Jones, that appears to be a rebuilding roster. They traded Stephon Gilmore to Carolina during the week, their best corner who was coming off the IR. They come back out and they storm back to beat the Texans, which tells you more about the Texans than it does the Patriots. So they have the luxury now of going 6-0 in that division soon as the season starts.
Oh, yeah. They're like kind of just rolling it out there, almost knowing like, hey, you know, we've got the division taken care of. Let's go knock out whatever other divisions we have to play. The first place teams against who they, you know, now they've already beat, you know, the Chiefs. The Steelers who finished first in the, you know, so or they've already got, I mean, they've already had to play the other first place team in the AFC,
right?
AFC, which was the Steelers. They beat them, but that was one quarter. They lost on a blocked punt. They lost on one quarter of football, just bungling up the fourth quarter against the Steelers. And that's why I'm so impressed with this team. They're a, you know, now they're a plus 108, a plus 108, and that's they're not crazy. Even undefeated. That's incredible.
That's crazy. This weekend had everything. If you like college football, you saw the number one team go down. If you like boxing, you saw one of the best heavyweight fights we've seen in years, which we haven't even had a chance to get to. Ohio State had a big win this weekend. They're now looking like they're another viable national championship contender. We'll see how the Big Ten shakes out, but I like where Ohio State is at this point. We had an unbelievable slate on Sunday of football games. And basketball is right around the corner. So this show is going to be giving you all that and more. Monday night's going on right now, so don't ask me why we haven't talked about it. And if you guys are watching it and you're now listening to this, please like, please share, please subscribe. Browner and Lawhead, we've had a great time. We'll see y'all tomorrow, same time, 6 o'clock. We'll talk about the weekend in its totality. Peace.
Peace.